Hi, David. First things for the 21st of November.
Good morning, Steve. Big day yesterday. Our first major competitive presidential state certified legally its votes. Now it's Georgia. And I want to spend today's podcast focusing on Georgia. And I want to open with a clip here from the governor's press conference yesterday. It was at 5 p.m. Eastern time, where he came in and announced he would be certifying the presidential votes. I want to play a clip. It's a fairly long clip. It's about 3.5 minutes. And rather than just open up the podcast with his voice, given the length of the clip, I wanted to say two things to direct people's attention here. First, listen to him as he says twice during the length of the time about the certification process and how he's bound to obey the law, but he has no choice to do it. He's clearly fairly reluctant. And then second, I want to... there's going to be three things. That's the first thing. The second thing is note the way that he clearly curries favor with Donald Trump in his comments about how Trump could still win this thing, more or less. And then third, I want to note the way he sets up the future backlash, the way that this outcome will be addressed, the pain that is going to be coming from lawmakers, Republican lawmakers, because of this outcome. So those three things: his statement about certifying, his currying a favor with Trump, and third, the way he makes clear that there's going to be pain to Democrats because of this. So this is Brian Kemp from yesterday, in Georgia. He's the governor certifying the results. Thanks, Steve.
Good afternoon. COVID-19 has introduced numerous challenges to county and state elections officials as they work to keep Georgia elections secure, accessible, and fair. Given the record number of absentee ballots and narrow margin in the November 3rd election for president in Georgia, I join many in backing a hand recount and urging a thorough investigation into any voting irregularities. The Secretary of State oversaw a complete audit, which revealed significant errors made in several counties, including Floyd, Fayette, Douglas, and Walton. It is important for Georgians to know that the vast majority of local election workers did their job well under unprecedented circumstances, and I thank them for their service. However, it's quite honestly hard to believe that during the audit, thousands of uncounted ballots were found weeks after a razor-thin outcome in a presidential election. This is simply unacceptable. I've heard directly from countless Georgians. They expect better, and they deserve better. It's important to note that this audit only looked at ballots, not the signatures on the absentee applications or the signatures on the ballot envelopes. The Georgians I've heard from are extremely concerned about this, so I encourage Secretary Raffensperger to consider addressing these concerns. It seems simple enough to conduct a sample audit of signatures on the absentee ballot envelopes and compare those to the signatures on applications and on file at the Secretary of State's office. This morning, the Secretary announced his support of strengthening photo ID requirements for absentee balloting. Voters casting their ballots in person must show a photo ID, and we should consider applying that same standard to mail-in balloting. I have heard from many members of the General Assembly, and I appreciate their input and share their concern. I look forward to working with Lieutenant Governor Duncan, Speaker Ralston, and members of both bodies to address the issues that have been raised over the last several weeks. Earlier today, Secretary Raffensperger presented the certified results of the 2020 general election to my office. Following Judge Grimsburg's ruling yesterday, state law now requires the governor's office to formalize the certification, which paves the way for the Trump campaign to pursue other legal options in a separate recount if they choose. Georgia has runoff elections for two U.S. Senate seats and a public service commissioner scheduled to occur over the next several weeks. We demand complete explanations for all discrepancies identified so that our citizens will have complete confidence in our elections. In the runoff election, we cannot have lost memory cards or stacks of uncounted ballots. We must have full transparency in all monitoring and counting. Every legal vote must be counted, and the security of the ballot box must be protected. As governor, I have a solemn responsibility to follow the law, and that is what I will continue to do. We must all work together to ensure citizens have confidence in future elections in our state. Thank you, and God bless.
Brian Kemp, by the way, was the Secretary of State himself for two terms, 2010 to 2018. So he is in part familiar with the systems he was criticizing.
Absolutely right. He hit, that is a like that is a if I was teaching a class at the University of Washington, that is a very powerful example of how you pass along responsibility in every step of that. At press conference, passing along responsibility to the Secretary of State, to the state legislature, to Donald Trump. It's a remarkably lack of courageous, cowardly press conference there, and also a remarkably partisan press conference. So, Steve, what jumped out at you in there?
That he was certifying it, but overwhelmingly saying it was still a stolen election, and that the votes that were cast by people were not legitimate if they didn't go his way.
Yeah. So he really only right at the end where he says, there's this, the law is the law and I will follow the law, is the only point in that three and a half minutes where he says anything about certifying the ballots. The rest of the time is an entire critique of the election outcomes, of the process, and a roadmap forward for the Trump administration and for voter suppression in the state. So I want to highlight it. Go ahead.
Well, that was my question. What's the Trump administration's, the Trump campaign's next, though they really have merged, haven't they?
What's the
next step in challenging Georgia? What is he saying there? Because he sounds like he's saying, faithless electors can be appointed and all sorts of things.
So I think that I've listened to it three times now, and it's really, really helpful to listen to it a couple times, because each time you listen to it anew, you hear a certain kind of articulation that becomes more meaningful once you understand the meaning, the importance of what he's saying. So first, he says to them very explicitly, this now paves the way for a recount of the ballots. He already did a recount. They just did a hand recount. So what exactly is a new recount going to do? Nothing, except they can do it. The Trump administration can request that again. And they have to request it within 2 days in Georgia. So it's got to be done right away. What will happen with a new recount? It won't be a hand recount, this next one. It will actually be an easier recount. It's a machine recount where you just feed the ballots in. The hand recount, which was not, which is a unique thing they do in Georgia to assess the kind of quality of the election. They always pick one election outcome and do a hand recount. this year they picked the presidential one because Trump wanted it, is a very stiff recount system. So they've already done the stiffest, toughest recount they can do. But Kemp wanted to make the point that, you know, dear leader, you still got another shot here, run another recount. Second, so that's what they, that's the first thing they can do. I expect that will happen in the next 2 days. Second, he says in there that we need to have greater monitoring of election processes. This is an absolute invitation to an attempt to put intimidating election monitors, whether legal or extra legal, outside of polling locations. Of trying to put some kind of lawyers in polling locations or militia outside of polling locations. So there will be, I bet, in the January runoff, which is the next election coming in Georgia, some very intense observations that really are intimidations. I think that will happen right now in the near future. Third, he is saying that Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, needs to provide a full explanation of the outcomes and how we got these lost memory cards or these changes in four counties. There are definite mistakes in there that the Secretary of State needs to articulate, but he Kemp, has articulated them as damaging only to one party, to Donald Trump, and that Raffensperger needs to explain them. This sets up, I think, a legal situation where the Trump administration can demand an explanation and then not accept that explanation and somehow contest the results, all generally, that if you cannot explain these couple errors, other than human error, which the Trump administration won't accept, then you should toss out the full process. So those things are the Trump administration trying to throw out all of the ballots in Nevada right now. They have filed a lawsuit to have the entire election overturned, is another Hail Mary process. So I think that we see Kemp laying out the short-term responses of the Trump administration. He should have nothing to say about any of that as governor. He should walk up and say nothing more than, legally, this is what I'm bound to do. This is what I will do. I certify. Have a good day. That's all he should say. So the first thing I want to talk about is just what I'm mentioning, which is the way he lays out this pathway. What a partisan, sycophant thing to do as a governor to the man who essentially put you in the governor spot. It was Trump's endorsement of Brian Kemp that made an enormous difference. So Kemp cannot afford to get on the wrong side or further on the wrong side of Trump.
Do you think that Kemp has any, continues to have aspirations beyond the governorship? Is any of this about, sort of being the good soldier for these Republicans who are still in thrall to Trump?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kemp won election very narrowly in 2018 over Stacey Abrams and is due to run, if he runs for reelection as governor in 2022, against a hypercharged Democratic base that will probably have Abrams running against him again. So his aspirations start with re-election. Beyond that, you got to think that he and Ron DeSantis, who are neck and neck in terms of the worst governors in this country, with the Texas governor Abbott, a little bit behind, but he's like the bronze medalist. Abbott is, but DeSantis and Kemp are the mini-me's of Donald Trump. DeSantis, the governor of Florida. Kemp of Georgia. They're the mini-me's of Trump. So I think that he's absolutely trying to make very clear that, look, I'm sorry, sir, I didn't win the state for you, but I want all your followers to know that I am entirely with you. And if I didn't have to follow the damn law, I would.
If only that pesky little law wasn't in my way.
Right, yeah, so- because and to be very clear on the law in Georgia and in Michigan allows no discretion to the governor. The governor has no discretion to assess the quality of the certification. The law is what's called a ministerial law, which is they have to administer it. They simply have to certify if it's been certified by the previous person, which in this case is the Secretary of State. So he does not get to inject his opinion in this. You saw his opinion all the way through that. His opinion is this is a bunch of crap. But his ministerial law, the law is written that you have to do this. So that's what he's saying. It's like, I have to do this, even though I think this is crap.
Well, he definitely is throwing in doubt whatever happens in Florida over in the runoffs.
In Georgia, yeah.
In Georgia. Yeah.
Okay, second here. I want to point out that he says something about checking ballot signatures. Now, when you vote absentee, and this is the way we do it in Washington also, you have to sign the outside of the ballot envelope. And they, when that comes in, they, being the election officials, check your signature against your on-file signature that is part of the voter registration list that the state keeps. That is standard protocol for all vote by mails. You check signatures against standing signatures. That's what they have in Georgia. They have it in Georgia as well. Now, in 2018, the law as it was written at that time allowed great discretion to the election officials as to how quickly they would notify the voter if there was a problem with the signature. And in a number of counties that were predominantly African American and Democratic, the election officials waited a long time to notify people about the signature questions and gave them the voters a very short amount of time to respond. Afterwards, Stacey Abrams and her organization Fair Fight sued the state and said there needs to be a consistent amount of time and it needs to be many days where somebody has a chance to respond. So I think it's 3 days now where people have a chance to respond, and the notification has to be given to the voter within 24 hours of when the ballot arrives. That seems entirely appropriate to me in a democracy. Like, that's how we should try to honor a vote. That's what is now in place because of what's called a consent decree that Stacey Abrams achieved in that state. And that was implemented this time around. There were very, very few signature rejections this year. I think because of awareness around this and because of the application of that law. That's good. Nothing but good there. Nothing but good. What Kemp is saying is that there needs to be some kind of audit of those signatures to make sure that they matched up. There is no audit needed. Those signatures were already checked every single time they came in. So there's no audit needed at all. So he's offering a conspiracy thing that these somehow weren't checked. They were checked. They were checked every time. So it's a nod to these kind of claims that somehow people were fraudulently voting in ways that that got around the signature system. No signature system was gotten around. It was followed to the T. Once the signatures are confirmed as matching the on file, the internal ballot, which is, you know, within the inside of that envelope, is removed and separated from the envelope, and they are never ever connected again. There's no way to ever connect the ballot to the person who mailed it, as it should be in a private ballot system. So there's no ability at this point in time to do anything with signatures for ballots that have been counted, because the ballots have been removed from the signatures after the signatures were checked. The fact that the governor would not just walk in and explain what I just explained in the last 2 minutes and do it with clarity, since he's the one, as the Secretary of State, who got sued for the previous practices in 2018 when he was on the way to becoming governor, is it an abdication to me of an educational responsibility that a leader has as an official. And it shows to me how enthralled he is or how embedded he is in the kind of conspiracy slash QAnon slash Trump world.
Well, also he said that he wants to see some kind of voter ID for anybody who votes absentee or votes by mail. Same thing, right? In this case, right? But from what I'm reading, if you're not voting for the first time in Georgia, you don't need to provide ID to vote by mail. That's because if you're a first-time Georgia voter who registered by mail and did not provide ID when you registered, you'll need to provide a copy of one of the following forms of ID along with your ballot. So is that still the case in Georgia? Because that seems to answer his complaint.
So when you become a new voter, you have to actually show ID to become registered to vote, or you have to show it the first time you vote.
Right.
That's what you just said. That's what you just said.
Even if after you're voting absentee.
Right. Absolutely. Right. You have to go in actually and show your ID to get the absentee ballot if you're a first time voter. That is like a restriction that I think is stronger than it needs to be, but it's there. It's a reasonable restriction. You're a first time voter, you got to come show an ID either when you register to vote or when you come request the absentee. After that, though, you're a returning voter. When you go to vote in person, you have to show photo ID, which is a whole different problem in our society that you got to do that because that's done unfairly. Which IDs count is chosen not randomly by the state legislature. But you do have to do that in person in Georgia. You don't have to provide some kind of ID in Georgia to vote absentee if you're a returning voter. In many other states where voter suppression is stronger, you actually have to photocopy your ID and send it along with your absentee ballot request, not your ballot itself, but the absentee ballot request. That's what he's suggesting should be done, that you have to show an ID to even request the ballot going forward for returning voters. Right now, they can just request, because they have an online portal for this, that the Secretary of State set up for this election. They have an online portal where you can just go on and request it. And Kemp is saying, we need to put a further check on this with a vote, with a photo ID. That's coming. So that's coming, and it's not going to be in place for January, as far as I can tell. But it is going to be in place shortly after that for every election going forward. Republicans, Kemp on down, he cites his colleagues there, and you see how he name checks them, right? Are gonna create this, and it's going to be a further voter suppression technique. And so that's a point I want to highlight, that this is the pain to come. That they're saying, look, we messed up because we didn't make this as horribly suppressive as we could have. And now we're going to make it harder for you in the future to get around this. So we're going to implement a photo ID requirement for absentee as well as in person. Look, I think that's horrible. But I can also say, as somebody who's dedicated to overcoming that work, that we will overcome that. That we will. That once you unleash freedoms to people, you don't put them back in the bottle with people without people responding against it. So he is saying that that'll be the pain that we're going to do. Again, that's a nod to the Trumpians of saying, look, I'm going to make sure that these folks who won this election are going to pay in the future.
But to be clear, people have had to show their IDs when they registered to vote. He's just saying, he's basically delegitimizing all these ballots that were absentee because they didn't have to show their ID each time they voted. But of course, he's not saying that about the Trump ballots in particular. He's just saying it about, you know, because Biden won.
Exactly. You're right. He's further delegitimizing it. And I guess maybe an analogy to this is like when you go through security at the airport, you show your ID, your ticket, plus your government-issued ID when you go to the security person to go through the checkpoint. I haven't traveled since COVID, but I could see maybe there's a second checkpoint that is like when you're getting on the plane, that could easily be a second checkpoint where you have to verify that you don't have any COVID symptoms or something like this. And you'd have to show your ID there again. That's what he wants, is that second ID check. It's another step in the process, which is not needed because it's already been done, but it says this. It's making this claim that somehow between the original ID and this secondary new moment, you're going to cheat on us. And that's what's happened. And you're right. That's what he suggested, is that somewhere after the original ID, there was this fraudulent Hugo Chavez-led kind of cheating that somehow did it, right? Again, as a governor, complete irresponsibility suggesting this. This is me as a teacher saying to my students, hey, you did really well. And I know you had to show your ID when you first walked in the room to take this test, which is actually not an uncommon thing, in-person testing at a university like UW. I've never done it, but many faculty do. But then saying, as a teacher saying, so you did really well, but I really think that there might have been some further cheating done afterwards. So I'm going to allow this exam to happen this way, but in the future, you're going to have to do something in additional to prove it to me because I doubt you. That's just fucking terrible.
Yeah, that's what he's saying to all about the results. I doubt them. And so therefore, if somebody comes to me to overthrow this election by getting the legislature to appoint some Trump electors, I will back them. That's his implication.
Exactly. Sure. All right. Third thing I want to highlight here is that, do you for a moment think that if the situation was reversed and it was Republicans who won a traditionally blue state like a Michigan or a Wisconsin, that Republicans would for a second stand for the governor doing any of this kind of stuff? They would not. They would be circling the Capitol in militia here. They would be circling the Capitol and threatening to do damage and harm to this notion that, hey, you're saying we cheated? You're saying we cheated? It's the kind of thing that is totally hypocritical. The only reason it's being articulated is because a conservative state has put up these barriers. These barriers have now been overcome by incredible organizing on the Democratic side, particularly people of color. And now new barriers are going to be put into place. So the coming backlash is real. It is unfolding right now. We in Common Power will be very active in Georgia going forward to fight against this. But this is the revolution meets counter-revolution meets another counter-revolution dynamic that is part of voting in this country.
Well, what's so, I guess, even more disturbing about it is that, you know, yesterday we talked about what happened and why it happened in this campaign. And you know, I was raising questions about how we, like, try to figure out what it is that Trump people believe. But, you know, you look at the 2016 outcomes and in Michigan and in Wisconsin, Minnesota, I think too, right? Fairly close, right?
Yep, 18th, yep,
and,
yep.
And yet the pushback in Wisconsin, for example, wasn't to call into question the outcome. Well, it was to call into question the outcome of the election, but we didn't go so far as to say this is completely illegitimate. Let's not accept it. And it's going to be a tennis game. It's going to be quite painful in Congress and in these state legislatures as each side attempts to, seize its moment to undermine the election, or the Trump side decides to seize their moment to undermine the election. I mean, we're not having these conversations in similar states where the margin was fairly close, right? Where Trump won, North Carolina. Not quite so close, but still.
So just to kind of make sure we're on, it's not that both sides are trying to undermine the legitimacy of the election.
No, I misspoke. I wasn't saying that. One side is.
Yeah, but one side is.
2016, the Democrats could have taken the same tack, is my only point.
Yeah, they could have. They certainly leveled a critique that has energized organizations to either be created like us or others to... They've leveled a critique of the set of laws that enabled the outcome there, that the voter suppression laws, because Wisconsin has one of those photo ID laws, both for in-person and absentee balloting that Kemp is talking about.
Right, but so they accepted the results.
Exactly. They accepted it. We were not 3 weeks out we did not have the governor, who was Scott Walker at that time, coming out and saying that, look, we're glad that we won this time, but this was terrible. Or if you had a Democratic governor in states, you didn't have that Democratic governor, like in Pennsylvania, come out and say that we accept these, but this is a bunch of crap. They didn't. They understand that the will of the people, unless you can show the fraud, must be honored. There has been no showing of fraud at all in these states. What you've found is a few mistakes. But the reality is that there's none of the showing of fraud. And so those authorities said, look, I accept this. This is what we do. We have elections in this country. So what we're seeing in Georgia, because it is like the tip of the spear in the Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida wing, is that, look, we lost today, but we will come back. This is the Republicans, more fierce than ever. Well, in this case, in Georgia, here's the good news. The Democrats are not caught off guard. They are not. They have been fighting against this for over a decade, and they've made this progress. And we will fight to stop the new photo ID for absentee ballots. And even if it gets enacted, because they have a majority in the Congress, I'm sorry, in the House and the Senate and the state, and they have the governorship. So even if Republicans do adopt it, we will get around it. We will overcome it. We will educate our voters to make sure they know how to deal with this. That's how we got to here today, and that's how we're going to get forward. Brian Kemp, we will see you in 2022, Brian Kemp. We will see you then, but we will first, today, in a couple hours, be there in Georgia for our phone banking. Because one of the ways that you deal with this is to put into place new leadership on the Democratic side. They have not won a statewide seat, the Dems, in 20 years in the state. We could win two of them in the U.S. Senate this time. That's how you make progress.
Do you think that who does this help in terms of this runoff, this kind of language?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. I think that I'm going to be doing these lectures, Steve, on Monday night and Tuesday night, coming up 6 p.m. Pacific time on Georgia. The first lecture on Monday is how Biden and Harris won. The second lecture on Tuesday is about how the Democrats could win the Senate seats. It is a really unclear terrain on the issue of who's helped by these allegations of voter fraud. Is it firing up the Trump base? Yeah, you got to think so. Definitely. They feel aggrieved, and that aggrievement, that perceived aggrievement, is the core emotion that they live on. So does it help them to be mobilized? Absolutely. But at the same time, does it also fire up the Democrats and say, fuck you, this is a bunch of crap. You're trying to steal it from us, particularly Black people. You're trying to steal it from us because you don't want African Americans voting. Does it fire them up? Absolutely. Absolutely. And then does it have a third potential effect, which is to convince some chunk of voters to just forget it? I quit. This is so bunch of baloney. You can't trust this process. I'm not going to be part of it. I think it has a little bit of that effect. How much of that is to be seen? And if it has that effect, is it going to happen on Democrats? No. No, because they already doubt the whole system. That's why they're working hard against it. Could it hurt among some of Trump voters or some Republicans? It possibly could when they look at Raffensperger and Kemp arguing back and forth, and you look at Perdue and Loeffler, the two Republican senators, calling for Raffensperger's resignation and doubting the entire process. So what I'd say slight advantage probably to the Democrats right now from all of this, but that slight advantage on all of this dimension merely moves the election a little closer. Republicans still have a bit of an overall advantage because it's more of a traditional red state. But I would just say this is just crazy that this is playing out in the middle of the state where we are going to have these runoff elections. That is part of the reason it is playing out, because it is, because so much is at stake.
Do any voter requirements change with this runoff, or are the people that are already registered at this point able to vote without having to go through any additional, you know, ID requests and ballot requests and the like?
Yeah, that's a question I don't have the exact answer to. But my belief from the way that the Republicans in Georgia have responded to this moment, that nothing can be changed for this current election. I know that absentee ballot requests, we're already well into the 700, 800,000 numbers of absentee ballot requests for this election. So I think that ship has sailed for this election, which is as it should be. We should not be able to change election laws in the midst of the process.
So then these close elections will be again closely watched. And in a sense, the Republicans have laid the groundwork for delegitimizing the Senate races as well.
Exactly. Right. The monitoring, the doubting, the full explanations that have to be somehow provided, which will be not deemed sufficient by Republicans. So yeah, they have completely laid the groundwork for it. And that is what Kemp's speech was. The speech was, hey, Trump and Trumpians love me. I have to do this. I'm really sorry, but I'm still with you. And then second, here's the tools. Here's the playbook for how you attack this election if you so choose, or certainly the coming ones. It's on the one, you know, as a professor, the professor in me, I find all of this compelling and fascinating because of the strategic kind of work that's going into all of this on all sides. As a citizen, I'm horrified and outraged. And as just to finish up this episode, I've lived most of my adult life in more of the professorial space, the space of, you know, my job here is to analyze, think, to assess, and then to teach. But what has happened to me in the last 5 or 6 years has been a definitive move into the citizen space. I will bring those analytical skills with me, but it requires action. It requires a response. It requires more than just, I'm troubled. So one of the ways that we respond is by investing in these runoff elections and trying to win now, and then coming back in 2022, coming back in 2021, actually, to fight the voter suppression laws. So let us all live in that kind of small C citizen space and do all that we can to fight for the right to vote.
All right, back to work.
Back to work. This is a little longer one, I know, but there was a lot to unpack here, but we got work to do. Let's go.